Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program, and editor-in-chief of Chicken Whisperer magazine. Today is Tuesday, February 4th, and I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, I welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
McMurray Hatchery is the world's oldest and largest rare breed hatchery. They have been providing their customers quality poultry since 1917 and have more than 110 different breeds to choose from. Be sure to sign up for their weekly special email at McMurrayHatchery.com and receive a $5 internet exclusive coupon to use on your first internet order. McMurray Hatchery, the world's largest and oldest rare breed hatchery.
Do you provide a heat source for your backyard chickens in the winter? In most cases, it's not necessary. But if you choose to provide a heat source for your backyard chickens, it's imperative to use a safe and effective heat source, and the only one I recommend is the Sweeter Heater. The Sweeter Heater is a safe, completely sealed, washable, non-breakable, energy-efficient, long-lasting, and reliable specific area heater that comes with a 3-year warranty. Ditch the dangerous heat lamp this season and invest in the only heater I recommend, the Sweeter Heater. Purchase the Sweeter Heater online at sweeterheater.com. That's sweeterheater.com.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is a special evening episode of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We normally broadcast 12 p.m. noon, Monday through Thursday, but a couple of times a month, the first and third Tuesday, we bring you a special evening episode of All About Quail with the Quail Lady. So hope you can tune in for those who can't normally tune in at noon during the week because of your busy schedules. But tonight, Alexander is going to be joining us, and she's going to be talking about incubation and brooding and hatching quail. So it's going to be a very good episode. Make sure you get your Chicken Whisperer notebooks out. And let's see. Okay, headset works. What time do you want the phone in? I got a little message here. Let's have her phone in about 5 minutes. That sounds good. She just sent me an instant message, so works for me. Okay, good. Hey, did you know we're having another Ultimate Chicken Coop contest? Yes, we are. We just gave away, for the month of January, an Ultimate Coop package valued at $2,000. This is crazy. $2,844, and that went to a young lady named Cassandra Strickland in Portland, Oregon. Over 17,000 people entered the contest. It was absolutely amazing. She won a beautiful coop, a customized coop with many upgrades, a walk-in run, a feed and water station, an incubator, a brooder heater, 3 books, probably $200 in gift cards from McMurray Hatchery, Stromberg's Chickens, a tractor supply, a Redoodles custom watercolor artwork signed by the artist, a fowl play products chicken swing. It was amazing. And but hey, that's all in the past. It is now February. I can't believe that. It is now February. And yes, we're giving away another awesome chicken coop. And the contest has already started. It's amazing. We are giving away another awesome chicken coop and a grand prize package. I'm going to tell you how to enter in just a moment. Okay? The February Ultimate Chicken Coop Contest is underway. Nobody has more chicken coop contests than right here, the Chicken Whisperer on Blog Talk Radio. Right now. And this will increase tremendously. But right now, as of today, the 4th of February, the grand prize package current value is $1,237. Right now, it includes, from the Urban Coop Company, which is sponsoring this contest, one of the many sponsors, but they're providing the big coop, the big prize, Urban Chicken Coop Company. The grand prize package right now includes the Round Top Chicken Coop, $799, shipping to the lower 48 states, which is $89, the extended run, which is $349. Now, the extended run was added last night because we had a little mini contest last night, and if the goal was met, then I add another prize to the grand prize package. So, for example, last night, we really wanted to boost the likes over at their Facebook page at Urban Coop Company. But more importantly, we wanted to flood them with thank yous for providing the coop. And my fans did an amazing job. They increased 3,000 fans on Facebook in probably the last 24 hours. It was amazing. And so we did add the extended run. We have many, many, many other prizes to add to this prize package. And throughout the month, we'll be having these mini contests, if you will, on our Facebook page. And if the goal is met, that specific mini contest, then that prize will be added to the grand prize package. So that's how it works. It is amazingly awesome. It's a really cool contest. And on the last day of February, which I believe is the 28th, Friday the 28th of February, one lucky fan is going to win this ultimate grand prize package. But if it's not you, don't worry, because we'll have another awesome ultimate chicken coop contest in March.
And if you don't win March, don't worry. We'll have another one in April. And we're going to have another one in May. And we're going to have another one in June. Nobody can touch it. Do, 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 do. Can't touch this. Okay, that's enough MC Hammer. I get so excited because nobody can touch this awesome coupe contest. And we're having like six to start the year. Absolutely incredible. So let me tell you how to enter. I know you want to know how to enter. So here we go. To enter, send an email with your name, shipping address, and phone number to contest at chickenwhisperer.com, okay? So what you need to do is send an email with your name, shipping address, and phone number to contest at chickenwhisperer.com. It's in the subject line, okay? So when you open up your email, right there in the subject line, put coupe contest, okay? You're going to send it to, again, contest at chickenwhisperer.com, and then down in the email itself, you're going to type in your name, your shipping address, and your phone number, and then hit send, and that's your entry. How cool is that? How easy is that? And then on the 28th of February, you might be the lucky winner. Winner will be chosen by random drawing, and lower 48 states only. No purchase necessary. This contest is not associated with Facebook in any way. Okay? It started on February 2nd, 2014 at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it will end at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on February 27th, 2014. There. That's all the legalities out of the way. So thank you, Urban Coop Company, and we will thank other sponsors as we add more prizes to the February Ultimate Chicken Coop Contest. Yes, if you entered the January contest, thank you, but you've got to enter again. These are separate contests, okay? So we have a January contest that's done, gone by, goodbye, see you in the past. This is a brand new contest in February. You have to enter again. One email entry per person. Enter more than once, you get disqualified. But, yes, you and your husband can enter, for example. Your whole family could enter. Your whole subdivision could enter for you. But each entry has to be a separate email address. So I can enter with my individual email address. My wife, she's got a different email address, so she can enter. My aunts, uncles, cousins, sisters, parents, they have different email addresses. They don't keep chickens. How dare them. But they can enter all the goodies to me. So that's very, very simple, and that's how it works. So right smack dab into this awesome chicken coop contest for February. We hope you'll enter. Also, you can. There's still time, as always, to subscribe to the most ultimate publication that's ever been published regarding chicken keeping ever on the planet, in my opinion. Chicken Whisperer Magazine. There has never been a team of experts put together that we've done for this publication. From top universities, major universities, CDC, USDA, it's amazing the knowledge these people have. And they're going to be writing and be contributors for this publication. And guess what? It's free! At the end of the day, it's all about spreading the chicken love, education, and the right information. I don't want you to rely on blogs and forums and articles and magazines that were written by someone who's had a chicken for 6 months, who looks stuff up on Google and Wikipedia and then post it in a magazine as their own. You're going to burn yourself by doing that, okay? So that's my main goal when I was first offered this opportunity, that if we're going to do it, we're going to do it my way. And this is going to be something that people can count on for the health of their chickens. I couldn't sleep at night knowing that there was an article in my magazine that said that a space heater is safe to put in your coop. I just read it 2 months ago in another chicken magazine. Okay, I couldn't sleep at night knowing there was an article in my magazine that said attracting wild birds in your backyard is safe for your chickens. I couldn't sleep at night. So when you read it in my magazine, folks, it's going to be the right information. There is a place for opinion and experience-based articles. Okay, we may even have a few. That's how, when I write, okay? I don't have a lot of letters after my name, but this magazine's going to just raise the bar for poultry publications nationwide. And guess what? It's free. The digital subscription, which, by the way, is awesome. It's not just a little PDF where you just go from page to page to page. No, it's interactive. It's cool. It'll have links to podcasts. It'll have links to videos. It'll have little flashes of things that may be important to you. You can flip the page just like you're reading the magazine. And it's not discounted. There's everything in the print magazine that, yes, you can subscribe to as well. People like print. I get that. I don't want you to think because it's free and it's a digital edition that you're losing anything. Okay? It's amazing the technology this publishing company has with the digital. Absolutely find it fascinating. You'll love it, and you're missing nothing. But people like the touchy-feely experience of reading a magazine. So, hey, again, keeping it simple and affordable, $9.95 for the yearly subscription. That's cheaper than any other poultry magazine that's out there, no matter how you figure up the subscriptions, how many issues and things like that. It's just, it can't be beat. Because at the end of the day, it's all about educating folks, spreading the chicken love, and keeping your chickens healthy, period. Okay? Got to love it. So I hope you enjoy it. We want to hear your feedback if you don't. So just like with everything else. But, very cool. And I'd send my shout-out like I normally do. All the homeschoolers, got to love you, the over-the-road truck driver, the whole. But it's in the evening. Homeschoolers are probably getting ready for bed. At least I hope they are. But we just thank you all for tuning in. Hey, let's look at what's happening the rest of the week. Tomorrow at 12 o'clock noon, we'll be back here at 12 o'clock noon. Tomorrow at 12, Garden Wise Living with Arlena. She'll have some, I'm sure, some valuable information for us about year-round gardening. This Thursday, Poultry Today with Dr. McCray, poultry scientist and professor. Dr. Bridget McCray will be here this Thursday. Don't have the topic yet, but she'll be joining us this Thursday, and that'll wrap out this week. And then next week, again, we'll be back with more Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. But tonight, we've got Alexander Douglas, also known as the Quail Lady. She is an author. She has a book on quail. She also has a book on incubation and hatching and brooding quail. Okay? And she just about has me talked into getting some quail, especially when she talks about the time it takes before they start laying eggs, which you can have for breakfast, too. You can hatch as well and repeat the process, but the time it takes from the time they hatch to the time they start laying versus the amount of feed conversion for before you can eat them, if you choose to do that, I don't know many of you won't, to the time that they're laying, how much feed and where they're growing. So it's amazing. So maybe quail in a sustainable way could be, as the Chicken Whisperer, it's hard for me to say, could be a very good choice for your backyard if you are into the sustainable lifestyle. So, and maybe even she'll go on a limb and say they make great pets. I mean, we know chicken make great pets, but are quail going to just walk up to your flyover, fly on your shoulder, and hang out for a while? I guess if they're tame enough, right? We'll have to ask Alexander that when we bring her on. So, got to love her. She's almost got me to the point of adding quail to our homestead. If we were ever there, since July of 2013, we've been on the road spreading the chicken love and enjoying family time. But and it's about to get more crazy, and I'll share this with you, then we'll bring her on. We're in South Florida now, enjoying the wonderful winter weather. 85 degrees today. I know, go ahead and be go, woo, woo. For all you who are up in Wisconsin and Michigan and Canada and everywhere else, when it was 85 today. There, I did it for you. But we're going to be leaving out of here, I think, on Monday the 24th. We will be stopping at the old homestead to lighten the load, if you will, quite a bit, getting down to the bare minimum with the RV, and then heading up to Atlanta. That's kind of the official start of the spring tour. We'll be launching that with a major national webinar at the CDC headquarters with the USDA, the CDC, and myself. And we'll be sharing more about how to sign up for that, free, of course. And then we'll hit the road with Tractor Supply. And we've got, I think it's 14 stops maybe on this tour. Hadn't been confirmed yet, but we're looking at Mobile, Lafayette, Houston, Austin, Waco, Dallas, Oklahoma City, Kansas City, St. Louis, Louisville, Cincinnati, Knoxville, and Chattanooga. So we're going to be on the road for about 6 weeks, maybe 7 weeks. It's going to be cool. We love being on the road, and maybe, just maybe, we'll have a film crew dragging around behind us regarding the possible Chicken Whisperer television show. So I heard that in the next couple of weeks, they may be sending a crew out, depending on where we're at, or how long they're going to be with us, what they're going to be filming, so they can get this pilot together so they can submit it and pitch it to a major network, maybe Animal Planet, to see if anybody wants to pick it up and make it a reality. So we'll have to see. I'll keep you posted on that, too. Let's go over here to the phone lines and bring on the Quail Lady, Alexandra Douglas, from, of course, the sunny state of Florida as well. Let's give her a big Chicken Whisperer a welcome. How are you, young lady?
I'm doing pretty well. It's this week, we're actually, we surpassed a little mini cold front, and it's yes, back to the 80s. I do, you know, I miss the heat when we do have those cold fronts and you want to stay in bed because of all the cold. And I admit I had some electric blankets the other day, but it's nice to be back in shorts, I must say.
Absolutely. Same here, even in South Florida, man. It got cold and drizzly. It was miserable. I know the people up north are going, shut up. But, you know, when it's 85 and the cold front comes through and it's 45 or 50 and drizzle, it still feels pretty darn chilly. I know, folks from the north, shut up. But, yeah, it is back. It is back to sunny and 85. I'm so glad. And so tonight you're going to share some information about a little bit about incubation and hatching and brooding quail. And maybe some differences there between the quail and the baby chicks and things like that, which you have to different, you know, how many days, the temperature's different, any special things with hatching out, and some of it I'm sure probably overlaps, but in the brooding, and how soon are they really going to, you know, with chicks and, you know, chickens, you know, 7 days, they're flying on top of their water and feeder, and then from there they're hopping over to the edge of the brooder and then hopping out, and, you know, so a quail being more of a game bird, if you will, you know, 3 days, 2 days, the day they're born, they're flying out of the brooder and things like that. So I'm no experience with raising or hatching out quail, so I'm sure you'll be able to answer all those questions for us that we have in the back of our minds. So I will, as always, when you're on, turn it over to you and let you educate us on kind of incubating, hatching, and brooding quail.
Yes, well, probably many of you are already getting that hatching bug because it's, you know, winter, and here in Florida, it's like spring weather right now that, you know, I want to hatch everything that's laying. Everybody's laying. I want to hatch everything out. So it is important to know some little basics before, you know, getting some quail eggs. And they are treated like chicken eggs, but there's, you know, you should take some considerations. First of all, unlike chicken, quail chicks do not have the same reserves at hatch. They absorb that yolk sac, and they need food and water right away. And therefore, shipping day-old chicks is usually not the best option unless you ship them right after hatch and provide some food, some grow gel in the box with them. But with chicken, you know, you get chicken in the mail, and normally they all come okay because they have reserves for up to 3 days after hatch. But quail, you'll expect a few deaths. Therefore, if you do decide to ship day-old chicks and quail, it is best to add a couple extra in there to make up for the losses. But consumers normally start off with hatching eggs or adult birds because hatching eggs, it's fun to get a bunch of eggs and hatch them out, because when they do hatch, it's fun to see all those little things popcorning out of the eggs, and it's just enjoyable. And every time I have a quail hatch, they are to be honest, more exciting than the chicken hatch, because you see one chicken hatch and they are so cute, but imagine seeing 200 to 300 little popcorn things jumping out of the shells. It gets a little intimidating sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
And, but it's fun. It's like, it's exciting. It just, it keeps your adrenaline rushing because you're like, oh, there's one, and there's six more, you know, they just start popping out like popcorn. So once they hatch, they just get out of there. Compared to a chicken, it takes a little bit longer. So that's one difference between a chicken and a quail egg, you know. It's popcorn. Basically, you know, get that popcorn bag and just watch. But another thing is that in this radio station, I tend to talk about coturnics mostly because they are the most popular type of quail, mainly because they are dual purpose for eggs, meat, and they make really good pets. They can be tame, although I do not recommend having them free range outside, because once they go free ranging, most likely they will never come back. They just walk off on you. But in the house, you can have them on the bed, and when I started, I had quail sitting on my lap while I was doing homework, and they wanted attention too. They would peck at me, play with toys, and they like their enrichment. They like to have fun. But another quail that I like to talk about are the budding quail. They're more flighty birds. They are monogamous pair birds, although some hobbyists do have them in colony situations, and I respect that. They're not really dual purpose, other than if you do call them dual purpose, it's pets or eggs. You know, they hatch as great as coturnics. However, they are tiny, tiny little jelly bean eggs, and they're just little, teeny little things when they hatch, and it's fun to watch those guys hatch too. But I'll be discussing those guys. And bobwhites are another common bird, but they do take longer to incubate. They do take longer to grow out and raise. Therefore, I'll mention them, but not as much, because the most popular birds to have as backyard pets and for the hobbyist are the coturnics and budding quail. There are other species out there, different types of coturnics. The ones I talk about are the Japanese coturnics, the Japanese quail. Mainly the other species, they're great for the hobbyists. They're great for breeders, but they're not really meant to be food. You can hunt them, but they don't make great pets. They're good. Budding quail are the top two if you're going to have quail, if you want to have quail for pets. Coturnics are the number one for meat and eggs and pets. But for starters, do not be discouraged if your first incubation of eggs turns out to be a failure. My first time, I had a styrofoam incubator, and those do work well. The circulated hovibator is what I had as my first incubator, and I forgot to put water in there, and I killed my whole first hatch. So my advice for everyone is, every farmer, breeder, and hobbyist have had the same experience at one point or another, and practice makes perfect. So you get do not be discouraged if you buy a set of eggs or you pick up a set of eggs from a farmer, from a breeder, go on eBay and buy some eggs, and you had the worst hatch that you could imagine. Either one hatch, no hatch, they exploded in the incubator, you forgot to put water in the incubator. There are many factors that a quail hatch will not work well. But at the same time, my professor always told me that if you can hatch quail, you can pretty much hatch everything, because once you get the quail hatch to the T, you can hatch chicken eggs, which that's what I did next, duck eggs, and then lastly, you can hatch ratite eggs, such as emu eggs. Emus are fairly hard to hatch because you can never candle them unless you have a freaking blowtorch. So practice makes perfect. And for starters, it is recommended to find local eggs to practice with. If you are considering shipped eggs from a breeder, do take in consideration that 50% is ideal. Even 30%, 20% is ideal. You do not know the situation or the factors that those eggs went through during the shipping process, whether they're shipped by FedEx, UPS, or the U.S. Postal System. They could be jiggled in the mail. They could be thrown off the cliff. You know, you don't know what happens during the situation. And don't judge the breeder if you don't have a good hatch. Shipping considerations should be taken in mind when purchasing from a breeder from a different state. So if you want to have a good hatch, you can start with a few adult birds and they can lay for you at the farm, and then you can set those eggs or you can pick up some local eggs to start off to try. If there's a breeder nearby, ask for a small amount of eggs to try out before ordering a larger number, because you don't want to invest in a huge number of eggs to practice on and then lose a bunch of money. It's better to start small, get a dozen eggs, get six eggs. Once you tackle that and get like an 80, 90% hatch or even a 50% hatch, then upgrade to the next batch. So start with 12, then if you do well with 12, get 24, and then so forth. Or even if your birds grow out from that six and then you want to hatch from them and then get a new bloodline in, then you can... also, you want to always expect, you know, a 50% hatch rate at the most if the eggs are shipped. Of course, sometimes you have even an 80 or 90%. I've had 100% with shipped eggs one time. It is, you know, you don't know how the eggs traveled, and always shipping and environmental stress can lessen the hatch rate. This does not mean the eggs are not fertile. It just means that the conditions the embryo was in prevented it from developing or caused it to die early in development. If the eggs were shipped, it is best to leave the eggs in the shipping container until they are ready to be placed in the incubator. Do not leave it on the counter and let the dog eat it while you're out and about, because that's a shame, and that's what happened to me one time, so that's why I mentioned that. Leave it in the container that you received, then open it right before you want to set it. They should be stored in a cool environment for at least 12 hours. This is like a 70, 80 degree environment, room temperature. If you don't have air condition like I do, or if it's in the egg room, I would expect about 80 degrees. And it's just so that the yolks can settle. 12 hours minimum, the yolks can settle, and that if it's really hot outside, I would recommend sticking them immediately in the incubator as development could have taken place. Therefore, if they arrived into, for example, the hot heat summer months, they arrive in the mail and, you know, they are warm to the touch, put them in the incubator right away, because if you put them in the cool environment for 12 hours, you are hurting the embryos that have started developing. Stick them in the incubator and let them start developing. Just do not turn for the first 24 hours. Just let them still stay warm and keep that consistent. And if you receive them from colder states, like for example, if I ordered them from Maine at this time or Minnesota, and I received them in Florida, I would want them to settle in room temperature before sticking in the incubator to not cause shock to the embryo. That will cause early deaths, and that would also cause a low hatch rate. So there are certain little tips that you can take to have a better hatch rate with shipped eggs. Now, if the eggs are coming from your own farm, you can they are viable for up to 7 days. If you do not want to set them right away and you want to collect them for the full 7 days, you can turn them once a day to prevent the yolks from settling. And this can be done by tilting the cardon that they are on using a book or a wooden block. And also, keep the eggs, always set the cleanest eggs and dispose the really dirty ones, but never wash the eggs. If you wash the eggs, the paint comes off, but also eggs are very porous and water will seep in, which can cause problems in development or bacteria build up. And when bacteria builds up in an egg, that can cause an explosion in the incubator. And when an egg explodes, that is the worst smell ever, and it's really hard to get rid of.
Oh, yeah.
I call those egg bombs, and they are nasty. They can stink up your whole house for like 3 days, and then you have to Febreze yourself, and it's just disastrous. Now, what is cool is that you can set the eggs according, you know, once you get them, or if you're setting them buying, you know, from your own farm, you can set eggs by the moon using some old-time farmer techniques. Quail chicks take about 17 days, Coturnix chicks, that is. Budding quail take 15 days, and bobwhites take 21 to 23 days. And if under the correct conditions, they can be set under the waning moon, under fruitful signs of Cancer, Scorpio, Pisces, and they are said to hatch out healthier and they mature faster. Now, I have not tested this, but this was from several articles, scientific articles, about they tested it by the moon, and they found out that when they set them under the moon of certain signs, the birds came out healthier. And so one day I probably will test this out myself, but I put that in my book because I thought that was absolutely amazing and interesting information. And four articles, scientific articles proved this to be true. And now, to ensure that the chicks hatch during the times of the fruitful moon, you have to select the three fruitful birth signs. To do this, you can purchase the almanac or the farmer's almanac, both of which contain that important information that you need. And then you, using the only fruitful days between the new and full moons, you count back 17 days. If you're setting the Coturnix, if you're setting the chicken egg, you count back 21 days. And then, you know, the all the different species of quail, ducks, emu, any species, you count back the certain amount of days to find the best days to set. And that is what some old-time farmers did in the olden days. And there were some old books that I read even, and that's how they set it. They didn't have information, you know, on how to do it. They did it by the moon. And that's some interesting facts there. Placing eggs in the incubator, you should make sure that the small end of the egg is pointed out down. The big end is where the air sac will form, and the problems will result, including death of the chick, forms on the opposite of the egg. Now, it is wise not to help a chick when it hatches. Therefore, if you set them correctly, they should, and you turn them correctly about 3 to 4 times a day and alternate days, the chick should develop on the right side of the egg. Therefore, problems should not result. When you help a quail chick, they're very weak and they usually do not live. Now, there are cases where they do live when you do place them, but when a chick doesn't hatch, it's usually meant to be that they're not supposed to hatch unless you had some incubator issues. Now, to calculate the hatch day, day one is the day you set your eggs, not the day of. Therefore, if I set eggs today, today is the day I set the eggs, but tomorrow is when I calculate day one of incubation. A full 24 hours is needed before you count day one. Therefore, do not freak out if 17 days from today your quail did not hatch, but the next day. It's not a late hatch. That's just how it's supposed to be. Now, there are many types of turning. In the hubibators, in the styrofoam incubators, you can incubate using the turning trays, the turners, the plastic turners, and they that's what helps the eggs, you know, turn 3 to 4 times. It's all automatic. You don't have to worry about it. All you do is plug in the turner, and everything is okay. In the cabinet incubators, they are turned a different way, and you don't have to worry about that. I hand turn, so I have to turn 3 to 4 times a day, and every day I alternate so that I'm tricking the embryo and getting new nutrition. Because if you turn the same time each day on the dot, the embryo is getting the same nutrition, therefore it's not really getting anything new. But if you trick the embryo and alternate, or for example, if one day I turn it at 8:45 p.m., the next day I'll turn it at 6 p.m. just so that getting different nutrition, then it's going to hatch into a healthy chick. Now, if you do not have a turning rack, they can be manually turned. And an easy way to know which end you're turning is to mark the egg with an X or an O. This is so it makes it easier for you to differentiate which side you already incubated for a designated time. You can set an alarm on the clock or on the phone to turn at least 3 times a day, and you can do what I'm doing and alternate the day so the embryo gets adequate nutrition. Because nutrition and health is key, and you want the egg to develop into a healthy chick to hatch. Now, it is very important to turn the eggs during incubation. You always should place it in the incubator with the small end down and not the big end up. Small end down, big end up, but not the opposite. You can roll them or you can turn them up to 180 degrees several times daily if placed on their sides. On the other hand, I tilt them on their sides, so I do not turn them, and I tilt a whole rack 3 or 4 times a day rather than hand turning each individual egg. Each rack has about 95 holes in them, so that helps too. And you can do that if you have a bigger tray. And it is very important to turn eggs. Birds in the wild use their beaks about 3 to 5 times per hour turning their eggs. This kind of natural instinct not only enables the eggs to be turned in that angle, but it enables the eggs on the edge to be moved to the center and get even warmth. So turning does not only give nutrition to the eggs and the embryo, it also helps the egg get all the equal adequate warmth from the incubator. Because if you have a still air, the whole incubator is not getting the same form of air. One side is going to get warmer air and the other side is going to be cooler. You have to rotate the eggs in order for it to get ample warmth. In a circulated air, the whole incubator is circulating the air throughout, but one side of the egg is going to get the air at one certain time and the other side of the egg will not. So that's why it's very important to rotate those eggs as well, so the whole egg is getting the equal amount of warmth and not just one side. And since the egg yolk contains more fat than albumin, its specific gravity is lower than that of albumin. Therefore, the egg yolk always tends to float on the albumin. Without turning the eggs for a long time, the embryo gets stuck to the shell membrane. And the purpose of turning eggs is to prevent the embryo from touching the shell membrane in the same position. So it's to avoid sticking it. And so, furthermore, to turn eggs can help all the hatching to get even heat and healthy chicks in the long run. So it's very important to turn those eggs. That was my other mistake when I started incubating. I didn't turn them. I didn't put humidity, I didn't change the humidity and add water. I just left them in the incubator and I expected them to hatch. And one hatched, but it died, but that's probably why. Now, for incubation of Coturnix, button quail, bobwhite, any form of quail, it is best to set up the incubator about 1 week before arrival of your eggs, because this gives ample time to make sure that the incubator is at the right temperature and that the humidity is right. There are many incubators on the market. For classroom projects and hobbyists, there are inexpensive styrofoam incubators. These come in still air or forced air. And I do recommend the circulated air incubators since they spread heat evenly throughout than a still air. However, for still airs, in order to get an even temperature throughout, the trick is to move eggs frequently so all eggs have received similar temperatures and keep the incubator in an environmentally controlled room where the outside temperature does not change unless you can give it the ability to. Whichever incubator chosen, you need an incubator, a turner rack unless you have to make the decision of manually turning the eggs, a thermometer, and a hygrometer. Always have a thermometer and a hygrometer. A hygrometer measures the humidity, and for quail, you need at least 50 to 60% humidity for them to thrive in the incubator. And a thermometer is needed because you want to measure the spikes in the incubator, and you want to make sure you do not have any spikes in the incubator, but measure the consistency of the temperature. It's always important. The incubator is used as a hatcher. There is usually a wire liner that comes with most of the single incubators. The cabinet incubators have a hatching tray or hatcher, which is a cabinet as well, specifically designed just for hatching chicks. Now, there are five factors to consider when operating an incubator. Providing proper incubating temperature, maintaining the same temperature in all parts of the incubator, providing the humidity for correct amount of moisture lost from the eggs, ventilation, and regular turning of eggs. The same factors will apply to the separate hatcher. Now, the humidity of the incubator is very important. The eggs should lose about 13% of the water content. With this said, Coturnix should have a relative humidity of 50 to 60% during incubation, and if you must up the humidity, 65% is ideal for hatching. Budding quail should be around 50 to 60%. 55% is adequate for hatching, but 65% for bobwhites, coturnix, and other species are fine. Budding quail are a tad for, they do not need as high of a humidity since it's very easy for them to drown. The chick could not make gradual change over from breathing inside to outside air without the humidity. If not enough moisture is lost, the chick has difficulty to maneuver itself to pip. The egg needs moisture and humidity. Therefore, if there's a lack of humidity, the chick basically dies inside the shell, and you do not want that to happen with quail because once they pip, you should expect a popcorn hatch. One comes out, and then you'll see like a bunch following, and it's fun to watch. It is recommended to placing an extra thermometer that did not come with the incubator, as sometimes those are faulty. So I like the digital ones, but do make sure that the battery is in there so it does not die. The ones that come with the incubator, if you must use those, get a couple more so that you can have not a fluctuation of thermometers, but just make sure that it is stable, because if you trust one thermometer and you have a failed hatch, it's usually because their thermometer is faulty. Now, 99.5 degrees Fahrenheit is the correct temperature for incubating eggs, but this is for the circulation system. Now, if you have a still air, 100 to 101 degrees Fahrenheit is ideal. But do not go over 105 degrees Fahrenheit, as that will kill the embryo, and higher temperatures tend to kill off embryos or give you more males in the long run. Now, Coturnix quail incubation compared to other species, they have 17 to 18 days of incubation. Budding quail is 16 days. Bobwhites are 23 days. Blue scale California, the California Valley quails are also 23 days. And always stop turning 3 days prior to hatch, because this is when the embryo starts to develop. I mean, not starts to develop, but they start to get to formation to pip. And Just remember that it should be 99.5 degrees in a forced air incubator and 100 degrees to 101 in a still air incubator to be equivalent to the 99.5. And relative humidity should be about 50 to 60% for budding quail. But at the end, for Coturnix and New World quail, they should be around 65% at around hatch day. Now, you can go on the web on Google and type how to do humidity readings. There are lots of old-fashioned hygrometers which give you a wet bulb and dry bulb reading.
Yeah, there really are. It can get confusing if you do that. And like I said, educate yourselves about that, because then you start. I'm going to let you continue, but you are completely right. When we were hatching in the classroom and things like that, and trying to make a homemade hygrometer with shoestrings and things like that, it sometimes can be that simple. But it can get confusing. You're right with the wet bulb findings and relative humidity, and just using a digital one that shows you the temperature and the humidity that's in there, and adding the water and maybe a wet sponge and all this kind of stuff to make sure it's accurate. It can be overwhelming sometimes.
Yes, that is true. And also with the old-fashioned ones, they're it's a mercury bulb and the glass, and you break, and it's very easy for it to fall out of the incubator. Therefore, you need to have that one and a few digital ones in order to have something that lasts. I have went through so many hygrometers because I get so excited over a hatch and I drop the hygrometer. But now, unlike chicken eggs, the Coturnix eggs, the budding quail eggs, it is recommended not to candle them, because you can candle them with a really high-powered LED light, or if you can find a flashlight or a candler that you're able to see it. But when you do take them out of the incubator, being such a small egg, even though Coturnix have been bred specifically to have a little bit larger egg lately, budding quail, all of the quail, they do lay smaller eggs regardless of the difference between them and the chicken size. Chicken egg won't lose heat as fast as a quail egg will. So just make sure that if you want to candle the quail egg, if you're not patient to wait the 16 to 17 days for incubation, candle them fast, but it's really hard to see any veins forming. It's hard to see the embryo. All you will see is the membrane, and you'll see the air cell, basically, to know if it's fertile or not. If you do see a bright green egg or some cracks, do remove it. A bright green, like a neon color, like neon pink. I've had a neon pink egg. I have a neon green egg. Make sure you throw that out, because that is the starting of some kind of bomb in there, and you don't want it. So discard any eggs that glow or have cracks, because those eggs are the ones that are notorious to have bacteria seep in. And once an egg explodes, the other eggs can get parts of it, and your hatch can go to waste due to one egg. So just make sure that if you do candle and you do notice any cracks, dispose those eggs. Even if you see some development in there, usually they do not last with a crack. Because what happens is that if there's a crack in there, the egg dries out. And if the egg dries out, it can also get bacteria in there, and bacteria incubator spreading with the heat. Bacteria loves heat. So bacteria grows and an egg gathers. It's just a mess. You don't want it. Now, if your eggs are overdue by a couple days, float testing can be done to test the freshness of eggs and also to check eggs that are overdue. You can do this with chicken eggs. I don't normally do this, because normally they will hatch around 16 to 17 days. The latest a Coturnix will hatch, if you're checking on them, opening the incubator a lot of times, would be 18 days. But you would heat up some water to 100 degrees. And the eggs, because the eggs are incubating between 99.5 to 100 degrees, therefore you don't want to lower the temperature because the embryo will go in shock and die. You want the water to settle, so you're heating up some water, and then you put the egg in the water and watch it settle. If the egg sinks, it never developed, and you can toss them. And a higher floater indicates the embryo was in the early dead moment, or the internal membrane ruptured and the egg dehydrated. Those are also tossers. And it also could indicate no development as well. A low floater indicates that the egg is viable and the development is at full term. If the egg is low, floating and rocking, then it's alive and it's fun to watch. And since the water is warm, you're not really harming the at the birth, you know, the embryo at all. But at the same time, the eggs are getting wet. So you have to make your own judgment call on that. Now, after the eggs are tested, only the viable eggs are sent back to the hatcher and the rest are discarded. This is if it's a late hatch, if you had incubator problems, or if you think that you are at loss with the whole hatch. That is, you know, that is the last resort to figure out whether you will have a hatch or you need to throw out the whole eggs. Now, on day 17 or day 16, day 23, either the Coturnix chick hatches, the bobwhite chick hatches, the button quail chick hatches, the chick looks like a miniature quail. It's already adapting to the environment around them. They act like mini adults, you know. But other than that, they are babies still. They sleep, they eat, they poop, they do everything. This age, around 12 to 24 hours old, I'm going to talk about the Coturnix now. They are about 7 to 10 grams, if not larger. They resemble bumblebees in their fluff. They should be nicely fluffy chicks. They already are receiving food and water, and the newly hatched chick is about 75 to 80% water once hatched, but as the bird grows, this amount decreases. But once chicks are fluffy, if you're hatching a big amount, you're going to want to remove them so that CO2 in the incubator doesn't rise, because the humidity rises as the oxygen and CO2 accumulates in there. And that is one reason why you shouldn't really be adding any water to the incubator other than the water that's needed to keep this 50 to 60%, because as the quail are hatching, there is an oxygen and CO2 exchange as they are breathing, they are alive, and that raises the humidity in the air. And so once the chicks are fluffy, remove them from the hatchers and provide them with food and water immediately, since they do not have the same reserves as chickens. They are monogastric creatures. They digest their food in a matter of an hour to a half an hour after hatch, much faster than chicken. They metabolize their nutrients faster. Therefore, keeping them in the hatcher for longer than they should be will make them weaker, and they can die. They can dehydrate faster. They can starve to death, even if they're put in there for a day extra. They need water, and they need food ASAP. And newly hatched quail chicks are precocial. They are relatively mature from the moment of hatch. They can walk and are feathered with down right from the beginning. They begin eating and drinking with some interference, and once they figure it out, they will thrive from there. The rule of thumb for brooder temperature is to start at 95 degrees and decrease the temperature by 5 degrees every week of age. But by watching the chick's behavior, this has to be adjusted. Just because it says in an article that they need 5 degrees every week doesn't mean it applies to you, because you may have a completely different temperature than Hawaii, than Alaska. Everybody's different. Therefore, chick behavior is also very important. You have the brooder. You have the temperature thermometer. Why are your chicks huddling? Why are they separated? You know, you don't understand why are they doing this. Behavior is very important. If the chicks are huddled under the heat source, they are too cold. And the problem with huddling underneath the heat source, even though the temperature is just right, they may need another heat lamp in there. They trample each other. When they trample each other, they die. That is also not good. You don't want to hatch a big hatch and then feeling discouraged because you have such a successful hatch. You stick them in the brooder with the proper brooder temperature. Everything is right. They all huddle in the corner, and then they die. It's just very important to watch that behavior because they may need more than 95 degrees because there may be a draft that you don't know about, but they feel it. They're small. Now, if the chicks are huddled away from the heat source or they soak themselves in their water source or pant, they are too hot. This also causes death because what they're doing is that they want to get wet to keep themselves cool. But while they're getting wet, chilling themselves, putting them into shock, and then in result, they're dying. So it is that is another reason is, you know, you have a 95-degree temperature. However, the room is about 102 degrees. Therefore, you need to tone down the temperature in the incubator. I mean, not in the incubator, but in the brooder. So the chicks are spaced out. And when they are spread out evenly throughout that brooder, the temperature is just right. The birds are comfortable. You see a few chicks that look like they're dead because they're so comfortable. Their legs are sprawled out. They take one chick takes half the room because he's so comfortable. And you know that they're happy. And this applies to all quail. So behavior is very, very, very important. Now, are we doing a break today, Andy?
We are. If you want, if you're at a stopping point or a place where we can, you're getting ready to pick up a different topic or change gears, that's fine. We can do that now.
Now, I'm going to talk about brooder setups and a little bit about grow outs and nutrition, but we can do a quick little break so that I can breathe a little bit.
That sounds fun. Yeah, drink a little bit, eat a little bit, take a little break, gather your thoughts, and we'll let our listeners do the same. Maybe they need a restroom break as well, maybe a new ink pen, since they've, I'm sure, been taking notes regarding all of this information. When we come back, don't let me forget, the first thing I want to do is have you share information about your book, specifically on today's topic that you have published. So when we come back, I'll make sure that we share that first before we get into the next topic. So you're listening to Alexander Douglas, also known as the Quail Lady. We're talking all about quail, specifically hatching and incubation and brooding. And we'll be back right after this short break from our sponsors. Stay with us, folks.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce, I'll don my super suit.
Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, the special evening episode, Tuesday, February 4th, with the quail lady, Alexandra Douglas, and we're talking about today quail, but specifically hatching, incubation, and brooding, and so we're going to bring her right back on now, and she's going to tell us a little bit about her book that she has out on these three topics we're talking about tonight, and how you can partake in ordering that if she has the information in front of her. If not, she'll share it with me, and I'll post it a little bit later. Alexandra, welcome back.
Hi. Well, yes, I did write the book. I wrote the book first out of three books now that I decided. I started the second book recently, Coturnix Revolution. It's the success in keeping the versatile Coturnix, everything you need to know about the Japanese quail. And this one is about the Japanese quail, the dual-purpose species of quail that I love to talk about. And it's a 410-page book, but it's basically a good guide to get you set up. Some say it's more for the commercial use, but it has everything from raising birds to selecting your breeders to genetics and all of the different varieties of Coturnix, and there'll be another edition next year or later this year with some new varieties, and it's the first of three books, and you can order it on Amazon.com, or I will give Andy a link where you guys can get it for a discount if you are a devoted Chicken Whisperer listener, but I'll give that link to him later and he can post it. I do not, it's a long link, so I do not have that memorized. But it's a pretty darn good book about Coturnix, I would say. And I'm still, you know, sometimes I have to reference it when I'm trying to remember what I want to say or if I want to look at pictures. It's full color, not black and white. You get to see how it is, and you see the truth on Coturnix. It's a really nice breed. I mean, not a breed. It's a very nice species, and they are very enjoyable. And once you start, usually you cannot stop. You start hatching them like popcorn, and this is the season where I'm hatching like crazy. It's enjoyable. You get to see all the different genetics, all the work, and the book really shows how to raise it in a hobbyist perspective, in a commercial perspective. It's the how-to. The how-to to the next level. And I would like to discuss brooder setups, because there are many ways to set up a brooder. Now, I do not recommend sand, and I just saw that Andy posted something on sand when I was going to talk about sand.
Wow, that's...
there was...
That was crazy.
Checking.
Yeah, in fact, I just got somebody had just posted several people. I was using sand in my brooders, but I just switched because I had a coccidiosis breakout. There's some information out there that's now emerging about a possible increase of coccidiosis using sand, as well as maybe an increased risk of bumblefoot in the coop. For example, when they hop down from the roost, your chickens, and then land hard on, sand is hard on that, you know, maybe it's on a plywood surface, the floor of your coop, causing it that way. Or they walk in the coop, and then when they jump to fly up and grab the roost, they've got, you think about sand, how sticky it is on your feet, on your hands, every time you go to the beach, wherever, the pond, the lake, and you jump from the coop floor up to grab that wooden roost, and as you do that, it's very forceful, and they're grabbing tight, and actually once they grab the roost tight with their feet are rubbing on that and turning on that with pressure, which could cause an open wound, could cause the increased risk of bumblefoot. So we're working at that. So people are like, well, how can that cause? So those are two reasons that we're looking into that as well. As well as a poor insulator in the winter. We've heard stories of a clumping into one big, just big sheets when it gets wet. And so people now are posting their experience as well on the Facebook page regarding that. There is some conflicting information out there. People are saying that's why we want to get to the bottom to this. That's what we're all about. And the study may come back favorable. It may come back 50-50. It may come back no-no. But when you see people, anybody recommending sand, ask them, is this experience-based? Is it opinion-based? Or is it factual-based with study? And have they looked at the increased risks of all this stuff? Or is it just, you know, well, I've never had a problem with that, and I use it, so it must be good for everybody. So just, again, kind of buyer beware type of information with that. But let's hear your opinion on it.
Well, here's the issue. You know, I live in Florida, so my pens are on ground, not for the quail, but for the chickens. And I just, you know, I had to treat everybody for, you know, their monthly wormer, but I do it twice a year with a more stronger wormer. And I did notice that some chickens had some coccidia issues, and I found some chickens of tapeworm, and I'm like, where did it go? You know, where did they get it from? Because I didn't introduce anything to that. And I'm just being honest, because everybody has these issues. If you have a backyard farm, you deal with these all the time, because, you know, dirt's not clean. And I have sand in the back coops, and you know, there's larger cases of bumblefeet, definitely coccidiosis, which is treatable. And, you know, you don't, if they are on ground, they eat worms, and worms carry back, you know, worms carry parasites too. So I'm actually going, I put hay over the sand, and then over that I'm going to put some pine shavings, just so that it's not just the dirt, but at the same time, you just have, it's really hard to, you know, have a farm in Florida if your main ground is sand. So it's just something you have to fight with and deal with sometimes, but adding stuff to the sand will help big time, and just watching over your farm, you know, watching over your animals, watch their behaviors, be a crazy person and look at their poop. That if you are breeding them, that is, other people will think you're absolutely insane, but that you have to look at all of, you know, you have to look at their poop. You have to check to see if, you know, they're okay. And with quail, you know, I was putting the sand from a different section of the farm into their dustpans, and I was noticing more bumblefoot. You know, they like to go into their dustpans to bathe, dust bathe. And the dirt, the sand would get into their nails. If their nail broke, because they are on wire, the nail broke, it would cause a bacterial infection in their nail. And then you would have to treat it. And then I also found some cases of when an egg broke inside there, then ants would come. But that's Florida. Ants show up anywhere. But I was seeing some coccidiosis cases in chickens, and so I did not want to have that problem with quail since I have not had an outbreak with quail yet. Therefore, I wormed them. I gave them treatments for everything, and I switched to just plain old oyster shells. Oyster shells are pine pellets in their dustpans, and they appreciate that. But I used to use plain old dirt, but it just seems that it's more problematic. If they cut their bottoms of their pads and they go into the dirt, all of that dirt gets into them, bacterial infection in their bumblefoot. So sand hasn't been on my favorite list for the past 2 months. And I switched to oyster shells, which I like for the breeders because they're getting that added calcium. And there is dust in there for them to bathe in. I've also added hay. They like the alfalfa hay because they can eat that and get extra protein. So that is my take on sand and dirt. For me, it's a mixture of sand and dirt because it is my ground. The donkeys pretty much ate the entire front yard, so I have just sand. But with small brooders and setups, don't use sand for the babies because of this problem. And I was going to, I did not put that in my book because I never saw it as a, you know, an option. But then I saw some pictures a couple days ago about chicks on sand and that bumblefoot infections, more parasites, coccidiosis. When it gets to a chicken chick, they can get very sick. But when a coccidiosis at that age, it wipes them out, and you don't want that. So it is best to set up your brooders before the eggs hatch. That is so that the newly hatched chicks have something warm and cozy to go into after that stressful adventure out of their shells. Basically, they're hatching out like popcorn. One pops out, and the next one pops out, and it's just fun to – if everything goes well, you should see a whole – popcorn, you know, you put a popcorn bag on the stove and you just watch it explode in there. That's how it should look. Now with heat lamps, I use, personally, I use 10-gallon fish tanks because they keep the bird warm inside. And I can fit about 20 chicks in there, but they do grow out pretty fast. I do not use a commercial brooder lamp. They are way too hot for the small birds. I use an incandescent bulb of 75 to 100 watts. Now, these days, it may be hard to find a larger bulb, and I would start stocking up because I think they're taking it off the market. So if you want an incandescent bulb of 100 watts, I believe 90 watts was the last one that I saw recently, but I used the incandescent bulbs. But what was funny was that, you know, there's a sweeter heater, and I didn't know what a sweeter heater was, but what I used in the past were these aviary brooder lids that would go over a 10-gallon brooder. And then I looked up what a sweeter heater was, and that's exactly what it was, except a different brand name. So the sweeter heater would be another option for you to keep that temperature stabilize, and that would also not cause any fires because you do not want your brooder room, your barn to catch on fire with a bulb. If you're using a commercial bulb, especially if that catches on fire and you lose your barn, that is not a good thing at all. Now, Andy, you asked how fast they grow because they are small. You know, chickens start after a couple weeks. Right. You know, they're jumping out of the brooders. They're annoying the heck out of you because you're ending up in the kitchen chasing a chicken, or that's my case at least. But I like to have fish tanks come with the screen lids, and I like to I usually go to thrift stores and pick up, you know, the fish tanks for less. But some of them do come with the screen lids. And I make sure after 5 days that there's a screen lid on there because around 10 to 12 days, they are jumping out. they're already flying. They get their wing. You can see their wing, the wing feathers coming, the primary feathers popping out of there around 4 days. They are already getting strong. So it is best to put that lid on them because they're so tiny that if you have a dog or cat in the house, those screens do protect. Also hardware cloth, putting that over and just having a few bricks, not a brick, but like something to weigh it down. That's another option if you do not have a screen lid. But they grow really fast, and they can fly by 3 weeks of age. And if you do hatch hundreds and they start flying out and jumping out and you find those in the kitchen, that's like a horror movie right there. So I usually have a bottom liner. You can use those non-stick liners. They're like shelf liners that are non-stick. For budding quail, those work really well. You want something that has traction so the bird does not slip and get splayed legs or injure themselves in any way because they are so little and they're so fragile. Even though they are smart little birds, if they slip and they injure that hip, that's pretty much it. But unless you want to pay a $200 vet bill like I did with my first quail, I don't recommend it.
Exactly.
Although he did last 7 years, so that's a positive thing, and he built up one of my lines. So I guess it's, but yeah, if they do, at 13 days old, he jumped out of the brooder and broke his distal tibia, and that involved a lot of casts and x-rays, and vets were wondering why I was bringing in a quail to the vet when it could just be replaced. So they do make good pets, though, so you can really bond with one quail that was, you know, given to you. So the nonstick shelf liners work really well. I also use the pine pellets. They have, you can, if you have a small amount of quail, at the pet store, in the kitty litter section, they have pine, some kind of pine pellets for kitty litter. Also, at Tractor Supply, they have a nice, it's called equine pellets. And you can get them for like $5 for 40 pounds, which is nice too. Those are what I usually get. Pine pellets work well because they expand when they're wet, so it takes longer to spoil. I don't really like pine shavings because once they get wet and soggy, they smell really bad and mold, and it just gets gross and you have to change it more often. But the pine pellets last longer, and so that stench doesn't get there. But I do recommend cleaning those tanks once a week to prevent coccidia, because with a lot of poop, coccidia can arise, and that bacteria pretty much can grow like crazy, and birds can get sick and die, and you don't want that. Now, for larger hatches, you can use larger fish tanks. You can make brooders out of wire, but make sure that they are in a draft-free area away from predators. Plastic storage containers can be used. You can get a Sterilite container and then cut the lid and put hardware cloth for air and then place a heat a 60 to 75 watt over that, but make sure that it's snug on it and not going to fall off if something jumps and tips it over, because you do not want you don't want a fire. Homemade brooders work as great as those battery brooders. Larger farms use the battery brooders as their chick quail chick brooders. They do work great for large numbers. Even though they're called battery brooders, they are not inhumane or anything. They're just a stack of brooders on top of each other, which you can make your own. You can use it with Sterilite, and there's a lot of chicks in there. Just make sure there's a lot of space for each chick, and it's not inhumane at all. I know that word battery gets to people. You know, if you say battery, you're a bad person. But it's just a term for, you know, a larger facility type storage container. But you can save money by making your own. We made one out of a we made one out of a bed frame. It was a water bed, and we took everything out of it and used that the extra wood as a bed frame. And that was our brooder. We put lids on it using window mesh, whatever it's on, just windowsill mesh, and that was over it, and that made a perfect brooder for a few weeks before the birds grew out. Make sure that their grow outs are taller because the birds do grow fast. Turnix are 3 weeks old. This is also for budding quail, although budding quail, I don't recommend them on wire at all. Coturnix, you can start putting them on wire. Bobwhites, you can start putting them on wire when they are around 3 weeks old or even sooner. Budding quail have such small feet that they should be on something soft their entire life. Therefore, I use pine pellets as their substance. And the grow-out pen for Coturnix after 3 weeks old can be a wire bottom or a solid bottom, similar to an adult. And if you're growing them out for meat or if you're growing them out to breed them further, you can weigh them towards your own standards. I weigh my chicks at 14 days old, 21 days, 28 days, and 42 days. And then my final determination of keepers versus freezer birds are at 56 days. Some birds do become pets, however, because you do bond with certain personalities. Now, due to the size of hatch, Coturnix chicks need some extra care at day one. Once they are dry, they need to be removed from the hatcher and placed into their brooders. They do not have the same reserves as poultry and waterfowl, and they need food and water right away. Now, protein is essential for Coturnix, and I did mention that with adults before, that protein is key for this bird. Even budding quail and bobwhites, protein is essential for all game birds. And a minimal of 24% game bird starter is recommended, although 28% or more is much better than that because of their fast metabolizable rate. Now, due to regions, medicated starter may be the only offered food. Therefore, check with your local feed store to make sure that the food is unmedicated. There are issues with having medicated feed because if the bird medicated feed has treatment for coccidiosis, and the issue with that is that there are many different strains of any kind of virus or bacteria. Therefore, if you're pumping them up with medication that they do not need, they gain a resistance. Therefore, if they actually need that medication later on, it does not work, and you end up losing your flock. That is why I don't recommend medicated feed. However, to each his own, and if you want to use medicated, if you feel it's required for your flock, you can go for it. I respect that. But personally, I always go for unmedicated feeds just because that's how I breed. But, everybody is different, and that's respectable. You can use chick starter as an unmedicated or turkey grower as an alternative if game bird starter is not able to be ordered in. With chick starter, I would be very cautious as chick starter contains too much salt and not enough protein for the bird to develop. Therefore, you'll get the birds will grow slower and they won't reach that potential that you want. If you invest in birds that are supposed to be a certain weight or supposed to be in that weight range for you to cull and get that weight, chick starter is not the best feed. You are what you eat. My orchestra conductor once said, "You are what you eat. If you eat Twinkies, you're going to be a big giant Twinkie later on," or something like that, he would say. So, nutrition is very important and health is very important for to be a successful breeder, but also to have very healthy chicks. turkey grower is fine because turkey grower is, you know, turkeys are game birds and feed is formulated for a turkey. Just check the percentages of protein. You might have to add extra protein from mealworms or alfalfa sprouts or find food that's higher in protein to add to it. But if you had the choice between game bird starter and other choices, even though game bird starter can be a little bit more pricey, I would get the game bird starter in order to have a really good healthy flock that you would be very proud of later on. Now, because Coturnics are quite small at hatch, blending the any form of crumbles to a cornmeal consistency the first week of life is optional, but I do this so that the bird can get as much nutrition as possible. They'll eat every single crumb that you give them if you blend it to cornmeal consistency, and this will start their growth at the right pace. There won't be any stragglers. Well, there will be a few stragglers because there's always a runt in the batch, but you'll get more of a consistency in weight and size. If you do not have a blender and you have a small amount of chicks, such as 6 to 12, you can use a mortar and pestle as well, but that takes a little bit more time. But if you want, some people like myself devote their time for these birds, so that is always wise. Now, not all people will agree to what I'll just say, but oyster shell, I give them to young birds in the form of calcium carbonate. I will crush them up in a mortar and pestle, and I'll give them to their game bird crumbles. Some people say that this is not wise, and the purpose of this is that their bones are growing, and sometimes they are eating so much and they're metabolizing so much, they don't get all of that nutrition from the calcium that they need. So I give them extra oyster shells, extra calcium. They don't eat all of it, but it has to be a cornmeal consistency for them to metabolize it. But this is so that they get just a tad bit more calcium so that they can get those strong bones, because they're going to be they like to run, they like to play, and it's important to have strong bones for them to breed and be healthy. Now, because they're so small, it's really hard to find that perfect food jar to feed them in. I use jar lids for smaller groups, and those really work. I moisten them with water, and I make it a little mash, water mash, and that tends to help provide them with hydration and stimulation to drink. I also give them inside the jar lid, I put a few marbles in there so that they can peck at the marbles and then get their nutrition that they need as well. Mason jar waters with the quail bases can be used as well, or chick bases with marbles added in. And to save some money, craft stores will sell marbles in large quantities. You can also check the dollar store, but just look around because there are some places that have them a little bit more expensive than others. Now, there are some problems that can be associated with any kind of quail chick, one of which is that they are small when hatched. Therefore, there can be some types of leg problems with the chicks. The most potential causes of the leg problems are usually primarily down to one or four possibilities. Incorrect settings of the incubation stage, or your incubator is unreliable. If it was too hot or too cold, you can get mushy chicks or just some genetically problem. They hatch just wrong, or they hatch out of the shell and break their limbs, or they hatch out with wrong limbs. That can be a problem with incubation. A slippery floor surface in the brooder once they hatch is another one. You have pine shavings sometimes can cause slippery surface, or sand can be slippery too if you don't watch out. That's why I don't like sand that much for chicks. Or a nutritional deficiency when growing. If they get too low protein, they can get problems in their legs. Or if they don't have enough calcium, they can have issues with walking as well. Also hereditary. Parents were not fed right, and you hatch out chicks from the parents. The offspring will get some issues. Like, for example, I hatched out an emu chick, and it was missing his hip. I found out that his parents were fed chick starter, which is which has totally the wrong nutrients in there. So the parents weren't fed right, and they were producing chicks with nutritional deficiencies, one of which was that I had to put an emu down. And once you hatch an emu, you tend to bond with them. They follow you around like puppies. But if you have an emu with no hip, and they live on those legs because they need to run and they fend for you and everything, putting down, you know, it's just nutrition is very important. So you are what you eat. So if you feed the breeders what they shouldn't have, or a low protein diet, it will affect the chicks and your whole line of quail as well. Now, the two most common chick problems of newly hatched chicks are splayed legs and crooked toes. In both cases, the issue may have been caused by at the incubation stage. Chicks that hatch with splayed legs may have had insufficient moisture when incubating, or means humidity, or too high an incubation temperature. Crooked toes can be hereditary, but often is due to the incubation temperature or humidity being too low. Now, somebody just, he messaged me on Facebook not long ago, and he's probably listening now, which is good because he's a quail starter, and I want everybody to be successful here, about the humidity being too low. But the most important time of humidity is a week before hatch. That is when everything is forming for the quail. Now, you do want humidity to be more constant throughout the whole hatch, but the most important time for humidity would be a week before your expected hatch. So just make sure that if you're having low humidity, make sure you start bumping it up a week before hatch if you are having issues keeping that humidity up. But it is better to have that humidity constant. But if you cannot keep it constant, that last week is the most important. Now, another cause of crooked-looking toes is a riboflavin deficiency, which is vitamin B2. And that may be a deficiency in the chick itself, or because the breeding stock had that deficiency as well and passed it on to the offspring. This is also what's called hereditary. The toes may curl inward or underneath, and the partial paralysis of the legs and rest on the hock of the joints. Now, some ways to fix that is to put it in a little yogurt cup while it's eating, but it's really hard to keep those toes uncurled. Now, curled toe paralysis may be helped if it is a starter ration that has insufficient riboflavin. In those cases, symptoms can cause to appear at around 10 days old and when a multivitamin supplement is supplied. I recommend using polyvisal without the iron if you are seeing this in the chicks. A few drops in the quart water for at least 2 weeks is what I would recommend. Also, adjusting temperature and humidity may help, as well as changing diet on the breeders. If you are seeing that the chicks are, you are having too, if you're seeing too many curled toes on the chicks, add some more vitamins, give some electrolytes to the breeder a few times before you incubate their eggs again. And if you do see a difference, then you know the breeders are lacking something. So you're fixing the breeders, and then they're producing better chicks in the long run. Also, humidity and temperature in the incubator. Just make sure that you're watching that hygrometer, that you're watching the thermometer. Keep everything constant. Have two or three of each. Keep that incubator stable so that you know what's going on. If you're at home, make sure that you are recording things every day. Or if you have an alarm on your incubator that it's recording what times there's fluctuation. Because if you're noticing something that happens to the chick, you can look back in your records and say, oh, at 8:45 p.m., the incubator went from 95.5 to 102. This could be the cause of so-and-so. there's usually a cause for everything, and being more scientific about it can help you have a more successful hatch as well, and successful offspring, successful breeders as well. One thing that helps to help with splayed legs is support the legs in a natural position. The Band-Aid approach is one of them, and for larger chicks like chicken, this is very simple. But for quail chicks, this may be more of a challenge. And if you can do this, that's amazing. The yogurt cup approach, by putting a little yogurt cup, putting the chick in there so the legs stay in a natural position, and letting the chick eat from the yogurt cup so that he's not being deprived of food from the other chicks, that is another approach. Eventually, the legs will hopefully be strong enough to support the chick. Now, sometimes the chick just stays splayed leg, and then you have a breeder bird with a leg that sticks out. If you know it was an injury, if it was a nutrition problem, you may not want that in your breeder program. The main cause of a development in chicks after hatching of splayed, which many refer to as spread a leg, is a slippery floor surface, particularly in the first few days of life. It may be that a chick with slightly crooked toes cannot stay balanced properly, so they splay their legs. But more commonly, splay legs will be caused by a slippery, smooth surface, such as cardboard, plastic, or newspaper. Therefore, those are what I do not recommend having in the brooder. It's just that they're so small and it's such slippery surface that they slide, they injure themselves, and then you either end up with a chick with problems, or you can't breed them because they're deed. So having a non-stick liner, towels, pine shavings, or pine pellets is a safer alternative to that. And then once those chicks grow up, they will be about 6 weeks old before they're fully matured. So it's the whole brooder process isn't very long for them compared to chickens. Really isn't. And for budding quail, it's about 9 to 12 weeks before they are actually mature. For bobwhites, it's about 23 weeks. So it's a nice adventure for chicks. And I bet many of you are going to be going out to look for eggs right now to get a popcorn experience. I have a hatch coming out on Valentine's Day, so that's my Valentine's Day present. So, but that's it for today.
Absolutely. No, that's amazing information, and information that they're not going to get anywhere else. It's based on education with your degree, and it's also based on a lot of experience as well. And that's what's very, very important. That's why we have the folks that we have on both this radio show and contributors to Chicken Whisperer magazine. So, wow, great information. I'm sure a lot of spiral notebooks are filled now with your valuable knowledge. And, again, more information about quail. And again, those who listen, it is the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show, but we talk about gardening. We talk about sustainability. We talk about using essential oils. We have a lady that comes on and talks about that, how we can use those around the homestead. We've gotten into quail now for the last few months, so that's again well-rounded, because we know that people, people often say, "Oh, backyard chickens is kind of the gateway animal to other things, living sustainably, doing compost bins, going to quail, now goats, and things like that." So we're trying to broaden it more than just chickens always have. So Alexandra, thank you very much for joining us today. Awesome information. And,
no problem.
You got to love it, and we look forward to having you back in a couple of weeks. Of course, our evening shows, the first and third Tuesday of every month, all about quail with the quail lady. So if you can't listen Monday through Thursday at noon when we're on, but you've got the kids settled down, you're in bed, and, hey, let's see what this podcast and broadcast is all about, then you can do so in the evening on the first and third Tuesdays when we welcome Alexandra. So thank you so much for sharing all your knowledge. And folks, I'll be getting that information out to you about her book specifically on tonight's topic. So thanks for joining us again.
No problem. Thank you for
Alrighty, yeah, absolutely. That's going to wrap up another episode of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Thank you very much for tuning in this evening. And again, follow us on Facebook and Twitter as well. Visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com. And you can get all the information about subscribing to the new Chicken Whisperer magazine on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. Tomorrow, 12 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we welcome Arlena Schott, and it's another great episode of Garden Wise Living. That'll be tomorrow. Join us then. God bless everybody.
Mm-hmm.